A new Star Wars journey begins in the place all good journeys begin. At, well, the beginning. This Star Wars Day, I'm excited to introduce the new Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, where we will piece together the complete story of that galaxy far, far away, in timeline order, from the dawn of the Jedi through the great unknown following the sequel trilogy. This is a podcast for both Star Wars superfans and complete newbies. Listen to the short intro episode now to hear how it works and what to expect over the coming weeks as we set the stage for the new television series The Acolyte, which we will be covering with weekly breakdowns. Subscribe to the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast wherever you listen to take part in one of the most epic and expansive stories ever told, following all the twists and turns from start to finish. May the Fourth be with you all month and beyond.
What about my brand name?
Welcome to Properly Howard, a podcast that reviews classic films and other pulp fiction. Today we take a look at the 1989 action crime comedy Tango and Cash. Apparently written by an 11-year-old, Tango and Cash stars Sylvester Stallone and Kurt Russell as two cops who get framed for murder by Jack Palance, who is a criminal mastermind with a rat fetish. With me to discuss this cinematic foobar is Dr. Anthony LaDon.
Loves rats, thinks they're mice.
The heart wants what the heart wants.
Steve, 1989, who was Steve Osborne in 1989?
He was a freshman, right?
Eighth grader, then freshman,
yeah.
This movie, Tango and Cash, came out in the summer? I mean, this seems like a summer
It's a December release, you know, trying to get that Oscar nomination. Typical Oscar bait.
Amazing that it wasn't even nominated.
Yeah, crazy.
All right, so give me a sketch of the life of Steve Osborne, eighth grade, going into freshman year.
I do enjoy a pair of sweats. Not super interested in what my hair looks like.
Is that why the Cubs hat was so prominent?
Yeah, Cubs hat was definitely a feature of, I don't have to do anything with my hair if I wear a Cubs hat. The big question was to pull up the bangs or to let them flow out from underneath the Cubs hat.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Usually your choice on that?
I'd let them flow. But I know a lot of people would do like, oh, you don't pull them back.
I never enjoyed the dent. You know, the hat dent, if you let it flow out the front.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even know what to do with it now. Because I've been shaved head for so long, I wouldn't even know.
It'd be great if you just had the bangs.
Yeah, for some reason, like that's where I just went and got the Rogaine. Bypass like the main part of the head, just find where the
bangs
would be.
Give me the Charlie Brown. Now, I have a few vague memories of you at this stage of your life. Did you ever wear a starter jacket?
Oh, yeah. I had a Niner starter jacket, like the satin style, right? And it was gold. And then I also had this, the starter parka became very popular. Probably more sophomore year, maybe. But that's where
Did you ever have a Bulls parka? Or am I making?
Never had a Bulls parka. I had a Niner parka, which was red, and then I had the Cubs parka.
Okay. And glasses. Always glasses.
Always glasses. Yeah, I remember my first day of freshman year. I was a Jordan fan. I liked Michael Jordan quite a bit. I remember I had a Michael Jordan shirt. It was a red Michael Jordan shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I also was like, oh, cool. I'm going to go. Oh, these are new sweats. I'll put these sweats on. And they were Chicago Bulls sweats that were also red.
Now, I didn't really pay much attention to the fact that I had grad. I thought of them as two individual entities. It wasn't really until I got to school and realized that I was head to toe red like an unsheathed dog erection.
But at least you were wearing the blue Cubs jacket.
I didn't have a jacket on. It was it was warm. Huh. So fortunately for me, and maybe, you know, I had to make an alternate bad fashion choice that got me kind of teased, but it was better than the alternative. So I actually wore my PE shorts after, like, I think like second period. I'm like, I'm just going to wear the PE shorts. At least it broke the color up. It was a necessary evil at that point.
The blue and whites?
Oh, yeah. The blue and whites.
So you thought that that would be better than wearing red from head to toe?
Yeah, I stand by that decision.
Huh. Now, had the Star Wars, your love of Star Wars already subsided?
No, I mean, we're still, like, still geek out on that. Still probably watch that a bunch.
Because for a lot of junior high boys, it was sort of like Star Wars until you discover girls. And then, you know, you kind of let that other part of your life go.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't exactly discovering girls. Not charting any territory in 89, that's for sure. Did I mention the sweats?
So did you see Tango and Cash in 89?
Yeah, I saw it in the theater. So like,
this is not the kind of movie that my mom would have approved of.
Yeah, I went to the movies a lot, like summertime for sure. And so this was a December release. So maybe this was an Empire Cinemas. You know, I remember back in the day, Empire Cinemas had the movies that are kind of on their way out. And then you would get a double feature for like the same price or less than if you were to go to UA6 or UA5.
Mm-hmm.
So, getting those double features like this feels like that might have been in that. I know for sure that's where I saw Big Trouble in Little China back in 87.
So do you tell your mother, like, we're gonna go see this movie, but really you go see the other movie? Or was it like, yeah, she's fine with you going to see Tango and Cash?
She was fine with that. Like, sometimes she'd be the one to get us the tickets. You know, you needed a parent to get the tickets.
Uh-huh.
Unless we were doing a sneak in, but usually we'd sneak into another movie if we were trying to like get multiple movies for the price of one.
Uh-huh.
That would happen more often than not.
See, for me, it was always the big thing, because it'd be like someone like you would be talking about how great Tango and Cash was. And I'd be thinking, like, I've got to like come up with a scheme if I'm ever going to see that movie. Like, I've got to find another movie that she would approve of. And then tell my mom that that's what I was doing. And then, of course, figure out a way to get to the other movie on time. Usually it would involve, like, you know, staying over at a friend's house. So there wasn't a question about, like, when to pick you up. Sometimes it was, like, buying a ticket to one movie and then sneaking into the other movie. I did that a bit. But for a lot of years, there were just movies I just never saw. To this day, I have not seen Princess Purple Rain. I just really wanted to see that movie. I begged to see that movie. Well, my mom hasn't given me permission yet. So
I get that.
Never saw it. And there's a little bit of me like, should I? Because at this point, it's a little bit built up for me.
I've never seen Purple Rain. Maybe your mom can write us both a note.
I'll bring something home for her to sign. I'll tell her it's, tell her it's something else. And then, how many times do you think you've seen this movie?
6 or 7.
So it's not on a regular rotation. It's just like what kind of mood do you have to be in to pop this?
Well, before it had been a while since I had seen this, and then I like showed up on Max, and I was home, and like, I haven't seen Tango and Cash in a while. I wonder how that holds up. And I was like, wow, I did not remember that being like that. But I remember really enjoying it, like even that time. And I do enjoy it. I think it's super fun. It's fun for all the right and wrong reasons.
Oh, really? What are the right reasons?
I mean, there's cool action. There's for sure cool action, right? I mean, just the ridiculousness of the escape, the zip lining with belts, the obviously the RV, and then there's like ATV chases. There's just, I mean, so much explosions. So, I mean, from an action perspective, like, there's some fun things to look at. And then every misfire, every poorly delivered line, every attempt at trying to make this a thing. Because, like, there's definitely a feeling that, you know, they're probably thinking, oh, this is going to be a franchise. And it's just, it can't get out of its own way.
So, for the first, I would say, I don't know, 10 minutes of this movie, I was just like rolling my eyes thinking, oh gosh, what am I in for here? And then as the movie got stupider, I felt like I got stupider with the movie. And I was like, I'm kind of into this.
embrace your inner stupidity.
The assassin comes in through the mirror. There's a lot of mirrors in this movie.
See, there's a lot of parallel stuff working together. It's very well crafted.
He comes in through the mirror. Just when Cash is sort of, you know, looking in the mirror thinking, I still got it, right? So he shoots him. He flies through the glass door onto the balcony. Just so he can hang there long enough to put his boot gun at the right level that he can shoot back. The guy, the assassin, sees the boot gun and immediately like jumps through a window from the second story and just starts booking it down the street. Did he show up to kill him or not? Because it feels like you showed up. You shot him once, but you saw the boot gun and got scared.
Well, you realize that you underestimated. I mean, if this guy's got a boot gun, what else does he have?
I guess that's it. I guess like it never occurred to him that someone could have a boot gun.
He got spooked.
he got spooked. All right, so Steve, tell me why you like the movie Tango and Cash.
It's a fun time.
Is it?
I mean, let's just break down some of the key elements, right? I mean, you have Stallone he's a stock market obsessed straight-laced cop.
He's straight-laced, but he's kind of wisecracking.
Oh yeah. Wisecracking indeed. And then you got
Kurt Russell. No one laughs at his jokes. Like, no. they're not funny.
In movie or in real life, too.
No, I think in general, like, I think the person who wrote this is named Randy Feldman. Like, there's a little part of me that thinks, like, he just hated Stallone. And he thought, I'm going to give him every bad joke. And he won't know that we'll all be laughing at him. In the theater. Yeah, he's always cracking wise. No one laughs because they're not funny.
You have Kurt Russell, who is like the, you know, he's just a mess. But he, for some reason, has access to like James Bond level weaponry.
Yeah, because he's friends with Owen, or mm-hmm. Does he work with, like, what is Owen getting out of this relationship?
I don't know. I have no idea what that relationship is. I think there's a whole prequel that we need to.
He just shows up at Owen's warehouse. Oh, there's a lot of people, by the way. A
lot of people in Owen's warehouse, and they're really cool with just giving him like the prototypes and the stuff that's not even beta tested yet.
He
uses these things like exclusively to try to save the day. By the way.
He's basically Batman, but he doesn't have any of the panache that Batman has.
I don't know, man. Maybe Batman's overdoing the panache.
What is that on top of his? Like, is that like a laser sight or what?
Yeah, it's a laser sight.
Okay, all right.
And yeah, I mean, you got an RV from hell. You got Jack Palance.
So
Jack loves rodents.
He loves his job. And this is what I love about this movie. Everyone in this movie, maybe with the exception of the police chief, mm-hmm. everyone loves what they're doing. Even the prisoners.
Oh, the prisoners are
they
stoked.
Just love getting up to no good. The
brown sugar up your ass.
The villains love what they're doing. The cops love being cops. Even the dirty cops look like they're having fun doing it.
What a great time.
The guy who's like into sort of faking sound, like faking tapes. He just loves his job. He loves his equipment so much. But no one loves no one loves their job as much as Jack Palance.
Oh my goodness.
Just wicked glee emanating off this guy. He's having a lot of fun. And that's sort of the premise of the whole movie. The premise of this movie is that there's an evil genius, Jack Palance.
Yeah, with Lo Pan.
Who loves rodents.
Mm-hmm.
And he could just have his dirty cop friends kill Tango and Cash. But he thinks, no, this will be a lot more fun if I create an elaborate scheme and make them rats in my maze.
Mm-hmm. And he's hands-on. He shows up in the prison basement and like hiding in steam and all that good stuff.
Hands-on, shows up, he breaks into a prison. That doesn't happen mm-hmm. very often. Breaks into right. the prison to watch them kind of get electrocuted.
I mean, it seemed like quite a bit of electrocution, and I don't know how much is too much, but I guess that wasn't it.
He also.
I remember the first time I was ever shocked by something, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was at the Exploratorium. And there were all these little things to, like, levers to switch and keys mm-hmm. to make things happen. And for whatever reason, like, I touched this one thing with a key and it gave me a pretty big shock. And that was a whole new experience for me. So then later, when I watch movies like Lethal Weapon and Tango and Cash, where people are getting shocked like that, I just couldn't imagine how much of that you could take. And apparently quite a bit.
Don't know what to say about that. I do know that Jack Palance is hands-on. He's for sure hands-on.
Who's the best actor in this movie? In terms not like outside of this, but like in this world. Who is giving the best performance in this movie?
I can't get enough Jack Palance. Like, I wish it was in every scene. I guess it's Russell because he's just doing what Kurt Russell does.
Right, and I think so. Right, I think Kurt Russell, to me, feels like he's selling this movie like any other movie, right?
Like, he walked right out of Big Trouble in Little China and right into this movie.
Yeah, I mean, there are shades of Jack Burton, but there's also shades like Overboard kind of...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's just, I feel like his, when you see Stallone and him together, the difference in a kind of a comedy action hero versus one that is not is pretty, it's pretty stark. It's very clear when they're trying to go back and forth and have banter. It's amazing to me that Kurt Russell can continue to have Kurt Russell-like performance next to the very stilted Stallone.
Well, we should talk about Stallone's performance. This is him doing something new, I suppose. Because, of course, he had done a couple Rockies at this point, right?
And then Rhinestone. Rhinestone, right? Was that was probably his first foray into comedy, 1984.
Of course, he's celebrated for Rocky and Rambo. Like he's a big, one of the biggest stars in the world.
Yeah, but by this time he'd done Rocky, Rocky II, mm-hmm. Rocky III, First Blood, Rambo, Rocky IV, Cobra, Over the Top, Rambo III, Lockup, and then Tango and Cash. Tango and Cash and Lockup were in the same year. Interesting. Two films where he's in jail.
So, all right. So he's, he's doing something that's not natural to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of going against what has made him a superstar.
Yeah, first buddy film he's been
yeah,
in.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, he's got a... And he's considerably less charismatic
mm-hmm.
than... And he doesn't get the girl at the end, right?
Right.
It's his sister, and he can't even keep Kurt Russell from dating his sister, dating in quote marks. I'm not sure what dating looks like in this world.
Yeah. Kurt Russell wooing Terry Hatcher.
So, and I think with this movie had some production problems. Like, I think there were like three different directors on this movie, and Stallone really wanted to have it rewritten so it wasn't a comedy. It was just a straight action thriller.
Which is crazy, right? Because this has to be a comedy.
All right. I could imagine a world where this feels more like Shakedown.
Sure, right? Like, I mean, I think this juxtaposed to Shakedown is actually really a good conversation, because there are some similar themes, right? I mean, obviously, they're both cops in this, but I mean, you've got dirty cops, you've got a mulleted, ragtag police officer who's not always painting in the lines of the law. And but obviously Peter Weller was a lawyer, but there's a certain similarity, I guess you could say, to at least the way that they present themselves, the Tango and Cash and,
mm-hmm.
and those gentlemen. And in terms of just how the movie goes from like, okay, we're doing this now. Now we're doing this. Like, there is also that similarity, because this movie sort of is all over the map, right? I mean,
I was just going to say, this movie seems like it's got some Lethal Weapon in it. It's got a little bit of The Rock in it. It's definitely got some James Bond in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a full on Mad Max sequence.
Yeah.
It's almost like what they did was they took all of the 80s movies that they could think of and they put it all into one movie.
I think I can describe Tango and Cash probably, I could sum it up. Tango and Cash feels like a sequel to a different Tango and Cash that was better.
Why didn't they ever release the first Tango and Cash?
You know what I mean? Because like sometimes sequels are just like, well, they just throw the kitchen sink at it. And it's like, this is like, well, these are the guys. Like, it assumes you know these guys.
I like to think that this is the sequel to Turner and Hooch. But the person who came on board was like, you know, I've got to, let's take this a different direction. Instead of the dog, let's do Sly Stallone. Oh, cool. Is he going to be an action? No, he's going to be an Armani with a badge. Is he going to be funny? No, but he really thinks he's funny.
Will there be a villain with cherubism? I mean, my goodness. Let's talk about Robert Zadar, shall we?
All right. So I want you to know that I thought, well, this is Mask. Like, he's wearing a mask. I'm going to look up the actor. So I looked up the actor, and that's what he really looks like. Which, you know, what the heck? I'm not the best looking guy in the world. Who am I to judge his massive chin? But then I was looking at his filmography and I was thinking, oh, this is interesting. There's a movie called Samurai Cop,
right,
that he's in. And I was thinking,
oh. I'm assuming the romantic lead.
I'm kind of curious. And then I saw like him in the samurai garb and I thought, oh, that works for some reason.
Oh, interesting.
This face was made for samurai garb. And no, I thought it was a prosthetic. I thought it was like that. The whole reason they did that is so they could do the chin joke. Like, you broke that chin.
Right.
Nope. That's his real face.
And Stallone calls him Conan.
There's a lot of self-aware. I wouldn't, maybe not self-aware, but
well, it's weird, right? Because it's meta. There's meta moments that would suggest the self-awareness, but the movie itself feels not super self-aware.
Yeah, like Rambo's a pussy.
Right, right.
Right? It's right out the gate. By the way, I don't know what kind of salt substance is pouring out of that gasoline truck. Like, he shoots the gasoline truck, and then salt or sand starts pouring out.
It's cocaine, isn't it?
It's supposed to be cocaine. I thought cocaine was powder. Well, the stuff that's coming out of that truck, salt.
I think it sets your expectations for the rest of the authenticity of any other scene.
Right. Okay.
You mentioned boot guns.
The clue to me that I'm going to be watching a movie with where people get halfway electrocuted.
Yeah, and like in sequence too. Like not like to completion. One guy goes down, back up, and it's like they go in and out of that like cuckoo clock.
Shall we talk about Terry Hatcher?
Why not? Hell of a drummer.
I was just going to say, her drumming.
Could you imagine?
Her drumming in this, it's almost as bad as anything else in this film.
I mean, the idea that you're like, hey, we're going to go to this exotic dance factory.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, begins with Let the Day Begin by the band The Call. And then they exit up a ramp on a motorcycle.
Right.
And then Terry Hatcher dances her way down, which I would describe this as like sort of like half bad ballet.
And just the leggings, the tights were an interesting choice.
And then the dance culminates with her banging on these drums. She doesn't have the drumsticks. She's got to ask the bartender for the drumsticks. She doesn't. I don't know if that's part of the show or whatever.
Like, then she just never knows what's going to be out there.
She just saw the drums and she decided, I'm going to take up the drums now.
Every night there's a different object with which she has to interact with. It's kind of like Double Dare.
She's absolutely never played the drums before. Well,
obviously she didn't bring the sticks, and she's like, well, I guess this is what you do, right? Yeah, the night before there was just like all this yarn, and she had to ask for crochet hooks, and she was just having to seductively dance and make a shawl.
She makes a kind of a cutesy advance on a chubby cop. And to me, like, that's got to be improvised, right? That cop isn't going to show up every night.
Right.
It's probably just a different chubby guy every night. This time happened to be a cop.
he's just smitten.
he's completely forgotten why he's there in the first place. He was seduced by the drum plane.
Just taken by hit sticks.
And then that scene leads into Kurt Russell in drag.
It sure does.
That's his plan to get out. She's like, can you just slip out the back alley? No, they're going to have that covered. Do you have any other ideas? And he talks to like a male stripper. Says, what's your size?
Because he wanted to see if it would fit her. That's the.
So they're going. Yes, they're both in drag, basically.
Yes, she goes out and in the motorcycle helmet, and so they stop her.
What now? Why does she need to dress up?
I mean,
like, why is this key to the plan? Like, can't she just
be herself?
Be a woman who rides a motorcycle.
I mean, it's this huge misdirect, right? So she has the helmet on, so they all think it's an aha moment.
Surely a woman can't drive a motorcycle unless she's dressed up like a man.
True.
And then the cop sees Kurt Russell. Now, after seeing Kurt Russell, the cop asks for a menage a trois.
Right. When, as one does when they're searching for fugitives.
This is like literally a Bugs Bunny cartoon. As soon as Bugs Bunny goes into drag, he can seduce anyone. It doesn't this even have to be the same species as Bugs
this
Bunny.
This is a very common trope. I watch a lot of Love Boat, and and there's an episode of Love Boat where, you know, I mean, the Love Boat is just teeming with 20-something attractive women, right? And, but boy, when, as soon as John Ritter had to put on a wig and makeup, Captain Steuben could not keep his hands off him. I watch this movie a lot, and I enjoy it every time, but I understand it less every time I watch it. I guess we have elevator pitch. What if you made the whole movie out of deleted scenes? I mean, first off, there's so much here that I think it's an onslaught of enjoyable things that don't necessarily go together to make a cohesive story.
Right? Yeah, you first meet Kurt Russell, you know, you can tell like he's a little bit vain, right? He's looking in the mirror. He likes to see his picture in the paper, right?
Yeah.
He's sort of like sucking in his gut a little bit. And it gets called out a little bit later during the naked prison scene. But he's got a boot gun and a laser sight on his regular gun. So there is a little bit of Star Wars happening, right? But yes. He's super racist, sort of mocking newly immigrated European people. He's legit dirty copying the Asian fellow who's pretending not to speak English.
Right.
And then in the prison, he demands that he doesn't want to be killed by a limey. He wants to be killed by an American.
He's a complex hero.
It's what we call a morally gray character.
Sure. I feel like they were just like while Stallone was trying to get rewrites to make it less comedic, but Russell was trying to get rewrites to make just more slurs.
Was this before or after Lethal Weapon?
I'm pretty sure this is after.
Because this does feel like someone saw Lethal Weapon and thought, let's do that.
But it's 2 years after Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, so this feels like we're going to do a Lethal Weapon, but we're going to pepper in an Escape from Alcatraz. We're going to pepper in some Mad Max. We're going to pepper in, I guess, martial arts at the end. Like there's a guy who seems to be a martial arts specialist, but he only kicks glass display cases. Like he can really kick. He can really kick, but it's only with that one object.
Yeah, I mean, this movie even has like a Enter the Dragon moment at the end with the
like
the mirrors.
The mirrors, that's right. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely borrows.
Like you said, deleted scenes from all of those other movies. I did wish that Jack Palance would be in more of the movie. He just looks like he's having a great time.
Well, doesn't he always? I mean, Jack Palance strikes me as someone who doesn't do a lot of script reading in advance.
Oh, really? Why'd you say that?
Well, like, you know exactly what kind of performance you're gonna get out of him.
I don't know. I feel like City Slickers is a little bit he's a little angsty in that movie.
Does he come off gravelly and breathless at all? I'm trying to remember.
I do believe that that's his normal voice.
Well, normal is
now. I don't have any experience with Jack Palance as a younger actor. Like for me he's always been about 80 years old.
Right.
I feel like I mean, I'm trying to think of the movies that I saw him in.
Batman,
City Slickers 2. This movie, which I should say, I thought I had seen this whole movie. I must have missed a lot of the middle. There's a lot in this movie that
I watched this movie twice in preparation for this. The second time I was like, I don't remember this.
Which
they were,
part?
They were like within 2 days of each other.
Which part didn't you not remember?
I did not remember a lot of the, I remember the prison breakout for sure, but I was like, what happens after that? Where do they go? And I couldn't remember very well the scene where he goes to talk to the FBI agent that's on the take. And then
that scene, by the way, could be some of the worst acting that's ever been in a film.
It's pretty bad.
I mean, they thought, how many one-liners can we cram into this scene? They're really bad one-liners. I mean, like I said, it's like Stallone is nothing but dad jokes all the time.
Well, and so there's something to be, I think this is something we're talking about, right? Because like one-liners were such a big deal at this time in action movies. Like, I mean, Schwarzenegger obviously have just like, to the point where it was expected, right? There were two probably main people that you would expect to hear one-liners from in the 80s, and that was Schwarzenegger in an action movie and Freddy Krueger. It was a necessary ingredient. And I wonder if with the Stallone, like if there is that element of like, okay, we're trying to get him to do more comedic stuff, or he's trying to, if we're going to use him as comedic, we know his acting limitations. Let's try to make it quips, you know, and same thing with Schwarzenegger. Obviously you've got the accent and then you've got acting limitations. And so it's like, if you just throw quick one-liners, quick little phrases, you're not having to like do full joke setup or really like, cause if you look at Kurt Russell, and a lot of his humor is conversational, and it's just much more natural in how he interacts with other people and how he can deliver those types of scenes, you know, while having action going on. Whereas Stallone needs to pause and deliver a very specific line.
Well, the other thing is that with those movies, maybe two or three one-liners, you know, it's mostly action. You want to establish the person's a badass. You want people to release a certain amount of emotion after the action's over. So the joke is the release valve.
Right. The action almost saves you from the one-liners.
Maybe it's just like there's so much packed in this movie. Like, we haven't even talked about the slinky attack.
That's right.
There's so much packed into this movie, and you go from one action sequence to the next. It's like, this guy's going to weaponize.
I was forgetting scenes.
This guy's going to weaponize a slinky. Never been done in a movie before. Which, by the way, the prison is sort of, it's a secret prison.
And nothing beats a big old industrial fan, right?
All right. So, initially, Jack Palance pulls out a rat out of a little box, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was going to kill it or something. Like, I thought, this guy's a bad guy. No, he just likes to have these things around.
Oh, God. Ray Tango. How he loves to dance. He waltzes in and takes all my drugs. And then tango's back out again. Well, I've had enough of this. Too much television. Can hurt your eyes. Now do you understand why we mustn't kill them?
No, Mr. Perret, I do not understand.
It would be much quicker.
And easier.
Quicker? And easier. Yes, quick and easy is how you make a cake, or clean a toilet bowl, or shop by mail.
But quick and easy is not how you run a multi-million dollar business such as ours. Now, Mr. Kwan, on the east side, that's your part of the city. Gabriel Cash has cost me more than $60 million. That includes guns and drugs and various other enterprises. On the west side, Mr. Lopez. Ray Tango has cost me even more. Two little mice. And so much damage.
But he calls them mice?
Right.
Does he not know? Like, is it like, no, this guy's got so much power. Don't correct him. Just right. Say yes to everything.
I mean, he's, well, I mean, keep in mind, I mean, people are snorting salt, apparently. This is a different world.
Then he has an entire maze, like in his evil lair.
All for an object lesson for like a 2-minute conversation.
Hey, he's been planning this for some time.
He's like, I don't think they're going to understand unless they see it visually. My trusted companion, Lopan, is a visual learner.
Why does he need to explain it to these guys? Why not just...
And he really does not. He, in his mind, this is such a complicated plan that it needs visual aids. And the visual aid doesn't really tell you. I mean, the visual aid doesn't have them in, like, you know, tank tops getting electrocuted. These little
he doesn't
rats
need. And... He doesn't need his rat mice. He just needs to say, "Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to frame them for murder. They're going to go to jail,
and then we'll probably kill them." Could you explain this with rodents?
I like that Lopan says, "Well, they're only going away for 18 months. What are we going to do after that?" But then he says, "Use your imagination."
Like, why'd you bring the rats?
He's clearly put a lot of thought into the visual illustration and not into the plan itself.
And so I wonder, like, did he already love these rats? And he was going to get him a maze anyway because he loves these rats and he wanted to have it built. But he was just like, oh, this feels a little too self-indulgent.
I like that there's a scene a little bit later where he has the rats again and he's just like kissing them.
That's
he's sitting in front of his own security cameras. Like he's sitting in front of the monitors, right? He's not having someone else do that for him. Again, very hands-on, this guy. He's cheering. He's really enjoying the Mad Max situation right outside his walls. And he's got his little rats that keep him company. And he just dotes on them.
Yeah, what is this lair?
It's an abandoned airstrip.
All the while, Harold Faltermeyer music is playing gorgeously throughout this entire film. And just giving you all those shades of Axel F. And Top Gun, all that good stuff. You've got the RV from hell, which is an amazing, like, if I mean, it doesn't make sense that part is of this, is, you know, the movie that you're starting with, which already is like a little out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you don't see that and ending action sequence coming. There's scenes where there's a bad cop, worse cop with a grenade.
Can I talk to you for a minute?
Not now. I'm busy.
Just a second, please. Seriously. I mean, you're getting a little radical here, aren't you?
What's radical?
Blowing a man's head off with a fucking hand grenade is a touch much, don't you think?
You got your way, I got mine. You know, I'm kind of glad you didn't want to talk, Raheem. You know that?
Let me just shoot him in the goddamn leg. He'll talk.
I don't want the leg. I want the whole package.
Maybe he doesn't know anything, okay?
I don't really care.
What do you mean you don't care? What the fuck is this? You're a cop.
Like, I was a cop. But because of this dirtbag and his friends, we're on the run. No, it's payback.
That's enough. I mean it.
Is it?
Oh, man, I heard about you.
Did you?
I heard you were a fucking Section 8. I didn't believe all that weird sadistic bullshit I heard you pull, but you are, man. You're for real!
If you don't want to get sticky, get back. Jack. Dun, 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 dun.
You got it, sicko. You blew it big time, pal. This asshole's out of control, and I can't stop him. But I'm not going down for this tango. I mean it. You're on your own. I'm out of here.
Don't forget the right.
You want my vote for the Psycho Hall of Fame, asshole? You got it.
You really do look like shit in a ponytail. No. I'm sorry. Bye, Barbara. Bye, baby. I don't want to hear it.
Perret! The geezer you watch, Perret. He's Perret.
Who the hell is Perret?
The bloke with me in prison. He's the governor.
Yeah, where's he now? Where's the governor?
The desert, Ryko Airfield.
Think he's telling the truth?
I don't know, but it's not raining, and he's standing in a puddle.
Disgusting.
Another tremendously acted scene. Is there a trope, a cliche, or a device that you liked in this movie?
Well, I am a sucker for the aforementioned industrial fan. Needs to be stopped so that you can get through it, and then it will just be spinning apparently fast enough to get every bullet bounced off it.
Is this something that's either stolen or an homage to Indiana Jones?
Perhaps, but I mean, there's also, because you see this in Die Hard too, right? You know, I mean, nothing quite gives this a scene like menacing gravitas like the shadowy fan and the threat of getting chopped up, even if it's like clearly, I mean, to get chopped up by that fan would be completely irresponsible on your part.
Well, then what you've done is you've effectively put a water slide right next to the fan. And you're going to slide yourself right into the fan. Unless you can use your boot to stop yourself at the base, which doesn't seem very hard.
Right.
A lot of drama. You know, he's going to slide about 5 feet.
Yeah, then there was a fight with a grappling hook. So if you're talking about 1989 me, and you're going to tell me that there is an RV from hell, there is a grappling hook at all, there's electrocution scenes, there is a sexy drummer.
A weaponized slinky in a jail cell.
Totally. I mean, it's almost perfect, right? It's got every ingredient that I would want. It's like going to like a sugar cereal buffet. I mean, like it's none of like the order in which I'm going to eat it makes no sense. I probably shouldn't eat any of it, but I'm going to get it all.
You know what? I was kind of making fun of this laser sight on his gun earlier. Why doesn't every gun have a laser sight on it? That's a great question. We have this technology. Like, why doesn't every single gun have a laser sight on it?
I guess you can see the laser.
Is it not manly? I have a laser pointer. It's pretty effective. I mean, it wouldn't be effective for like super long distances, like a sniper or something. Is it not manly enough, like to have a laser pointer?
I remember the first time I saw a laser. I was like, oh well, this is game changer.
Yeah, this is every single person is going to have perfect aim now. No, we just choose not to use that technology.
Now, if you had a grappling hook with the laser,
the grappling hook's great. I like a villain who can use a grappling hook.
I like how he just had it. Like, I kind of feel like if you're in, I mean, I understand like this is a prison run by, you know, dirty cops, and so all these guys are kind of free to roam about, but it's like you could have gotten a gun, right? I mean, couldn't you have given him a gun? But like, you're like, look, here's the thing, we'll give you a grappling hook, you know, we're not
my trope is I like the one British villain, you know, an otherwise American crime scene. You know, you have that one guy with the just an evil accent. And, you know, he's kind of out of place, but usually he's like a specialist. Maybe he's a little bit crazy. This guy's a lot crazy. Pretty decent with the grappling hook. You know, like when does he get to practice?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you don't just get out of bed and know how to grapple.
Like at the gun range, do you think that there is a grappling hook room?
Yeah, there's a grappling center.
No. I just want to use the grappling center today.
Yeah, you have all these, you know, just mannequins, and you're just getting your grapple on. I'd be nervous to use a grappling hook.
Do you like the idea of a boot gun?
It seems impractical.
I like any kind of weaponry that can be incorporated into footwear.
like a little knife coming out.
Yeah,
of
the Dark Knight Joker had the knife coming out of the boot. I look at one like a man of action has a fake leg, but the leg itself is the weapon. Yeah. In this movie, you had a fake dog.
Yeah, he sure did.
It was like a stuffed. I don't know if it's supposed to look like a real dog because it's basically just a stuffed animal.
It was a stuffed Doberman that explodes.
I think that one's not quite perfected yet.
That's the thing about the tone of this movie shifts all the time. Like, I've never, like, am I ever supposed to feel tense, right? Like, am I ever truly supposed to feel that there is, like, impending peril? Because there's so much wisecracking, and the music can be so whimsical at times.
Well, and the heroes never feel like they're really in peril. I mean, I guess when they're
being elected. They never feel yeah, but even then, they were, like, still, like, kind of silly. And they get over it really quick.
This movie is very silly. I mean, otherwise, why choose Jack Palance, right?
Right. No, the movie is silly. I mean, that's it's kind of its whole thing, like more than anything else. And so I think maybe that's part of, like, because Lethal Weapon is a very effectively humorous, but also carefully done police drama, right? Like, there's a police problem, and there's a story and a plot.
Well, everyone around Mel Gibson, like seems to be like they seem to take their job seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Mel Gibson, it's like, what if you had one guy who was just kind of wacky, right? But everyone in this movie is wacky.
Yeah, everybody is wacky.
Let's build this entire movie around Mel Gibson wacky.
But even Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon is troubled and suicidal, and
Cash is absolutely racist. This is right. All an homage to Mel Gibson.
They're taking all the elements of Mel Gibson except for the drama.
The other trope that I love is there's like a standoff at the end. You know, you've got the pretty girl who's gonna get, you know, she's got a grenade wrapped around her neck, I guess. But you're threatening them with the knife, right? So it's not enough that the grenade could be wrapped around her neck. It's like a straight edge. It's like an old barber's straight edge, I guess. But you need a final fight scene. So everyone just decides to drop their guns to go fist fight each other.
Right.
And then I like a little hall of mirrors, you know, at the end.
At some point, this is my failsafe. If I get cornered, I better be getting cornered in my mirror room.
That will throw them off for sure. Sorry, you were going to say?
Oh, I'm also a sucker for any scene where a cop tastes cocaine to prove it's cocaine.
Except for it's rather salty because it's actually salt. I like it when he's criticizing the dirty cop's eating habits when he throws his spaghetti on the floor. He's not watching his calories.
Yeah, that's a priority at that moment.
Is there a tweak that you would make to this film to improve it?
I would maybe a couple of scenes that link other scenes together.
Why is Kurt Russell's hair that way?
Why is it that way?
Yeah, why is it that way?
Because it can't.
It doesn't really ever, like, he uses a lot of hairspray, it seems to me.
Yeah, he looks like Lion-O, like, the cartoon.
He is the exact, he has the exact same haircut as he did in Big Trouble. And not even a hair of it has moved.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
He can be electrocuted. Anything could happen to this guy.
He gets crazy wet, and then he shows back up, and it's back. It's just back.
The hair is just perfect all the time. And I'm sorry to bring this up again. What is his relationship with Owen again? Like, I want to know.
It's complicated.
This guy exists only to create weapon prototypes for him. But he's not like a millionaire that he can pay Owen.
And he's not working is he work for the police?
I don't think so. I mean, I think maybe he's just like a high school buddy.
Maybe.
I don't know what Owen's getting out of this relationship at all.
No, I don't know either. But all of his stuff is getting ruined.
I mean, maybe maybe I'm under, I'm overthinking this. So if you're Owen and Kurt Russell wants to be your buddy, I mean, don't you just let Kurt Russell do whatever he wants?
I guess so.
I mean, that guy's got amazing charisma.
It's an interesting dynamic that the more disheveled cop, right? You have the very well put together Stallone. It would almost make more sense that he would have access to all this.
Yeah, because he's doing stock trades and whatnot. You could imagine him sort of being a day trader on the side.
Right, right. But it's Kurt Russell with a very inexplicable relationship to high-end weaponry.
Here's the thing about Stallone. Like, you know, Kurt Russell has all the charisma. Stallone has zero charisma in this movie.
Right.
Negative Howard energy he's giving off. But I know that he can, like, he's legitimately funny in Rocky.
Right.
Like, he's got a charming personality, so we know he can do that.
Yeah, I think the character has to have a certain element of brain damage for him to be charming.
So he's trying to come off as smarter than he is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not working. All right. Steve, is this movie better, worse, or on par with a Ron Howard film?
In terms of, you know, we talk about, like, Howard, does he get less or more out of, like, big star, you know, studied casts? And there's a lot of heavy hitters in this film. Plot wise, I think Howard would put a little more effort, but there is. So I feel like performance wise, it's properly Howard, but maybe it's a Howard minus two for the cohesive narrative.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to say that everything that you just said about like Ron Howard's ability to get performances out of actors, that this movie has none of that. And the only reason that it works at all is because Kurt Russell is just doing what he does naturally. The writing is horrible. The writing is just god awful. The writing in this film is as bad as Terry Hatcher's drum playing. The performance by Stallone is one of the worst I've ever seen in any movie.
Knock, knock. Yuck. From the look of your diet, it's obvious you're not too interested in counting calories. Could it be that you're just too busy counting the money they paid you to set us up?
And I just watched Mikey and Nikki. I felt like I was being hung from a chain and my toes were being dipped into electrocharged water.
So you didn't like it.
I watched it on Tubi. I was grateful. I kept on waiting for the commercial breaks. The commercial breaks actually improved my enjoyment of this film.
Wow.
But I will say that I do enjoy Jack Palance with a couple rats that he's just doting over. I like to see Jack Palance with animals.
that's a wonderful statement out of context.
So this is a Howard probably minus eight.
Wow.
That might be as low as we've gone. I might have given Teen Wolf 2 a Howard minus 8.
This is more enjoyable than Teen Wolf 2. I will stand by that. Teen Wolf 2 offended me.
Is there a half the battle, one to grow on moment in this movie?
Oh, I mean, don't kiss the rat.
He thinks it's a mouse. That's the thing.
is that why it was all right for him?
He loves them. He loves them. He'll hold them up to his face. They'll take both rats and push them together and motorboat the rats.
Uh-huh.
A new Star Wars journey begins in the place all good journeys begin. At, well, the beginning. This Star Wars Day, I'm excited to introduce the new Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, where we will piece together the complete story of that galaxy far, far away, in timeline order, from the dawn of the Jedi through the great unknown following the sequel trilogy. This is a podcast for both Star Wars superfans and complete newbies. Listen to the short intro episode now to hear how it works and what to expect over the coming weeks as we set the stage for the new television series The Acolyte, which we will be covering with weekly breakdowns. Subscribe to the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast wherever you listen to take part in one of the most epic and expansive stories ever told, following all the twists and turns from start to finish. May the 4th be with you all month and beyond.